listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. Listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, I'm Alan Cardoza, and you're listening to Answers for the Family. This show was born out of a desire to help guide parents and adolescent service industry professionals alike to professional resources as they face critical moments with their children and their clients. Today, I have with me as a co-host Tom Costanzo. Tom is the founder of ASNAP, which is a, well, Tom, you just tell us what it is. Well, I don't have to say it.
ASNAP's Adolescent Special Needs and Placement. We work with at-risk teens and their families, both in interventions and helping families find treatment programs for their kids when necessary, in a nutshell.
And besides that, we know that you're also a volleyball coach, no, and you've been a teacher and
administrator, coach, counselor. If it can be done at the high school level, I've probably done it.
All right. Well, today our guest is going to be Stacy Cannonberg, and Stacy's expertise is in helping families get involved in education. Stacy is she's an author, a publisher, a consultant, a speaker, a motivator, a blogger, and more than anything else, a mom. So, Stacy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
All right, we have got you. One of the things that, I mean, it's also a pet peeve for me, which is about parents getting involved. Tell us this, when do parents need to get involved?
You know, my belief is they need to be involved day one. They need to be involved right at that very beginning stages of being a parent. When they're in the hospital, you're bringing them home. They need to be involved at preschool. Because my belief is if parents aren't ready for preschool, they're not going to be as ready for kindergarten. They don't just one day wake up and say, let's get ready for fifth grade, if they haven't already been doing all the things they need to do by being involved in kindergarten and preschool to get their children on the right track.
Okay, well, what? How did you figure this out through was it through Hard Knocks or?
Well, it was. I was a mom. I had worked in corporate America. I decided the minute we were having children that I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. So from day one, I was always home with my kids. And I was one of those moms that knew I wanted to start a business someday. I wanted to do something from home. So when we were building our house, my husband and I had already planned, oh, this will be Stacy's office. We just don't know what it'll be someday. And it was literally through a series of Oprah shows. Bless Oprah. She had a show on the Walking Buddies, and it said, call your Talpa neighbor. And I thought, you know what, I don't have a community in this new neighborhood that we just built this house, and I don't know people here. So I literally called another neighbor to get the neighbor's name that I knew was home with her kids, and called her, and I said, hi, you don't know me, I live right up the hill. And I was watching Oprah, and she had a show on the Walking Buddies, and the lady burst out laughing, and she said, I just saw that, and I was thinking of calling you. So we started walking. Her kids were 5 and 3, and mine were 1 and 3, and she had 2 girls as well. But she was one of those moms that was volunteering in the classroom, so she'd started talking about positional words and high-frequency words and sight words. And I tell you, I was lost. I didn't know what any of that was. And she's like, I'm like, what are you talking about? Positional words and sight words and high frequency words. And she's like, oh, Stacy, this is the vocabulary of kindergarten. And so you need to start, you know, preparing yourself now. Your kids are 3 and 1. They need to be ready for kindergarten because it's changed.
Oh, yeah.
And it really has changed.
Mm-hmm. I would say if you're lost in kindergarten by 5th, 6th, 7th grade, forget it. You have no chance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, let's face it, kindergarten math is they're doing math in kindergarten. They're talking about, you know, adding and subtracting already in kindergarten. And let's face it, I probably wasn't until 3rd grade that we were learning adding and subtracting. So you're right. By the time, you know, kids today in 6th grade are doing math that I probably was learning in high school. So, you know, they're bringing in some calculus equations, and they're talking about calculus. We did not talk about calculus until calculus class when we walked in. So it has really changed, and the best thing that you can do as a parent is to get involved and find out what children are learning in each grade.
Well, and I agree, and having now a teen and a tween myself, now, when do you think the curriculum starts to get beyond the average parent?
You know what? I would say in third grade, believe it or not, there's some math concepts that occasionally get introduced in, depending on what your strengths are. There are days where I, you know, thank goodness for Google, I have to Google things because mm-hmm. I don't know what they're actually asking. It kind of depends on where your strengths are. But I will tell you that I think, and maybe you might want to add on this because you've got kids older as well, that I would say math by fifth grade is a little bit more difficult than I thought it was going to be. And my daughter's going into fifth grade, and they're days on fourth grade math that it's getting a little challenging for me.
Well, I think you're right on target. Fifth grade was the one for me, and as a room dad for the kids, for my own kids, in fifth grade is when I would go to the teacher and they would say, okay, today I want you to work with group A or the blue group, you know, on math, and she'd give it to me, and I'd walk over and I'd quietly say, you are giving me the answers, aren't you? Because I think we're already over my head. So...
Well, just the calculator. I mean, if they don't sit down with you, really, when they're handing out the calculator, because they're giving calculators, don't panic. In kindergarten, it's not to cheat. It's just to get them used to using the tool mm-hmm. of the calculator. And so by the time they get to first grade, they're doing different things with the calculator in second grade and third grade. And by the time they're in fifth and sixth grade, that calculator all of a sudden looks really different than the calculator that I know.
Yeah.
So by the time they get to eighth grade, it's beyond me. I mean, I think there needs to be... a way to teach parents how to use that calculator, because the parents that I'm talking to that have got kids in eighth grade are saying, okay, I don't know how to use the calculator. It's beyond me.
Stacy, what tactics or what worked best for you when you felt lost? I mean, how did you bring yourself up to speed, or is there anything a parent should be looking for to make that process easier, that transition?
I think that's a great question. It's something we all feel. That's one thing that you have to know. We all at some point feel lost with something because we're not, you know, we are the parent. We are our child's first and foremost teacher, but we don't know all the answers. And so I think the minute you feel like, okay, I'm getting overwhelmed, this is starting to get over my head, the first thing you need to do is go in and talk to your school, your teacher. They have resources at the school. They have extra tutoring. They find out what your school offers. And one thing Ellen was mentioning is he's a room teacher. An easy way to find out what's going on in your child's classroom is to be involved. So, you know, get together and sign up to volunteer and get to know your community. If you've got other, you know, parents that are volunteering, if you join the PTA, if you join the PTO, if you join the Booster Club, you're meeting a community. And it's through talking to those parents that have children in your classroom. By showing up at school events, you're being able to meet these same parents. And I like to tell parents, look, starting at preschool, many of our children will never leave that school. Maybe 50% of them will move to a different school over time. But for the most part, you want to get to know the children in that enrollment as well as the parents. Because it's a perfect opportunity to talk amongst yourself and say, look, my daughter's struggling with this concept. How is your daughter doing it? And maybe you'll find that after talking to three or four parents, it seems to be an issue that everybody seems to be struggling with, and then you can go to the teacher and say, you know, it's not just Heidi. I know that, you know, these kids were also, their parents mentioned they were struggling with it as well. Is there something we can do to help out?
Well, absolutely. And you brought up the thing about being a room parent. And for the men out there listening, it's no longer the term room mom. In fact, about 10 years ago when I became a room parent, the form that was sitting in there, when you went in the class for kindergarten, there was a form there, and it said, if anybody that wants to sign up for a room mom, please sign here. And so I signed up, and it said, put down the time frame within the day that you would be most available, and I put all that in. And I didn't really think about it, and at the next meeting in which the teacher brought together all the people that had signed up, they said, you know, they said, we're now also making an announcement where they were changing the form. The form will now be called Room Parent. And she said, now I want you guys to know, now Mr. Cardoza did not ask to change the form. He signed it as Room Mom, but we're going to change it to Room Parent. And that year, there was four men in the school that had become room parents. And I, by the time I left, that was in obviously in just grade school. So by the time my boys were out of grade school, I think at last count there was 18 men that were signing up as room parents. So things are changing. So men, don't feel like you can't do that. It is something you can do, and it really helps you know what's going on in your kid's life. It helps you know what your teachers are thinking, what they want your children to do. It's a great experience. I recommend it to anybody.
I totally agree. I can't imagine going through these years with my kids and not being involved in their school. There's nothing better to walk in at lunchtime and having all these little kids say, you know, hi, Mrs. K, hi, Mrs. K, hi, Mrs. K. You know, they get to know you. And if you're worried about your child being bullied, if you're worried about your child not having friends, you really, as a parent, owe it to yourself to go make friends with your child, to plan family activities with other families that have kids that are the same age as your children, because that way they build that their own community within your community, and you're helping them have that basis of having friends that they don't have to actually go out and meet. You're kind of helping them build their own little community.
That leads into a question I had. How do you, how do I put this? How do you tiptoe between being involved with your kids without embarrassing them, and or being over-involved to the point of maybe creating a sense of entitlement in the child? Well, I've been there. I have four kids of my own, and I've had to walk that, negotiate that minefield myself. What tips do you have for parents on how to do that?
And so, Stacey, let me interject something really quick, because Tom just brought that up. Going from grade school to middle school, in middle school, my boys said, Dad, you know, we really appreciate the fact that you were, you know, involved in the school, but now we're in middle school. Could you not?
Yeah. As I said, minefield.
Yeah. So, Stacey, go with that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was actually going to make that point, because do get to that age where they don't want you to be as involved anymore. But I still think that there's a way that you can be involved. There's always things at the school that they're looking for. And the best thing you can do is work with a group of other parents. Get involved with the PTA. Get involved in the booster club. And create a volunteering community, so that you're still talking to your school and you're saying, look, you guys need help during this lunch period. My two children will not be in that lunch period that I'm helping out for, but other kids will see me there, and they'll tell, you know, my kids, oh, we saw your mom, and I explain that to my kids. I'm not there to embarrass you. I'm there to help your school. Your school needs help. They don't have all the resources. If they need an extra pair of hands, that's what I feel I can give back to my school, and I think a lot of other parents feel that way. But one of the things that you can still do is still show up for school events. Still show up for times when your school needs help, and it might not be, like I said, for your own kids. It might be somebody else in their grade might be struggling with reading or struggling with a math concept or need a little extra time one-on-one with somebody to help them with these concepts. Those are things that you can still volunteer for, then you're teaching your child that, you know, you're very lucky that you have me at home. Not everybody has, you know, this kind of family dynamic. I'm helping other kids in your class be able to get a little extra attention, too.
I think that's inarguable because, you know, particularly at the high school level, middle school level, that teacher really is only interfacing with that child for, 45 minutes? And yet the community and the parents have so much more contact, so much more input in the child's life, and I just don't think it's going to work unless parents are more involved. And again, you know,
I absolutely agree with you, and I would actually take it a step further and say that part of the reason I think our educational system has problems is because we don't do a well enough job of empowering parents and kids to be involved with education at every step of the way. I mean, I love what Bill Gates says. You know, parents of high school kids, you need to be involved in education. But again, you just don't wake up one day and can just run in and help in ninth grade if you've never helped all the way along. It's easier if you've been involved at preschool and have gone on those field trips and have gone on Pumpkin Day and have gone to the apple orchard and to build that community up. And it's harder to take a parent and want to inspire them to get involved, especially when you're talking about high school where everything is so much beyond them as far as the math. Things have changed, and it's a harder process. So I think that's the one thing that we can tell parents today is, okay, maybe we can't fix this now, but let's start from the beginning. Let's start in preschool and empower those other parents to be more visible in school. And they really need to start showing up at PTA meetings, booster club meetings. They need to show up at school board meetings, because I think they need to show that they're a community that cares about their school. You know, you point to every successful school. If you find a successful school, you can see that there's a successful community backing that school. Find a failing school, and you'll find that there's not people showing up at those meetings, and it's just the same group of five people trying to make those changes, and they're not having a lot of help.
I totally agree with you about very intimidating to walk in, say, your child's junior year of high school and decide to become involved. By that time, the parent, average parent, is going to be lost. What kind of changes do you think we could make within the educational system as it exists to encourage more parent involvement?
Well, I think it needs to start at day one. I mean, let's face it, kindergarten has changed, and it's really hard to get that list of what they're being tested on academically. And I really would encourage all educators to get on this page and say, we need to release this information, whether it's a blank report card so that we can show parents just how advanced that grade has become with each grade. I think we don't do a really good transitional stage from grade to grade. I mean, there's a big jump between kindergarten and first grade. I would say there's a big jump between second and third grade. I would say there's another big jump between fourth and fifth grade. And, you know, that's where my experience is because that's where my kids are. Mm-hmm. But I know that there's a big jump between middle school and high school. But I really think that just getting the communication, the academic things that kids are supposed to learn out there would be a great help to parents everywhere. I mean, when we're raising our kids, we go to the doctor and the doctor says, this is our 2-month checkup, this is what we should be expecting. This is our 4-month checkup, this is what we should be expecting. This is our 6-month checkup. You know, where does it, and then all of a sudden it gets to kindergarten and it kind of stops. We don't have those benchmarks. And I understand that you don't want to, you know, make everybody feel bad if their child isn't at the same level, but I really think, how hard is it to send out the 7 things kids are tested on in kindergarten? They're testing on the letters all mixed up. They're tested on basic shapes and colors. They're tested on how far they can count to 100. They're tested on numbers 0 to 10 all mixed up. And they're tested on counting objects to 10. And some schools test on basic coin recognition. Okay, back up. As a parent, I'm thinking coins, they're going to swallow them. I never dreamed kindergarten, they're going to be already talking about coins. But coins are the basis for so much that they do in kindergarten. It teaches them how to skip count by 5 and 10, and then that leads to counting with dimes and nickels. And so it's really the basis of learning the multiplication tablets. If they're really good skip counters, they'll know how to, you know, times things. And so it's really the whole basis of math. And this is a concept that, you know, it wasn't really taught to me that way. I'm not a teacher by trade. It wasn't until a teacher sat down and said, let's talk about the importance of skip counting and what it does for kids in math. And I'm like, well, why aren't we saying this? Why didn't somebody say, you know, broadcast announcement, Department of Education, hey, parents, skip counting is the basis of math. I mean, you know, how easy is that? It's just a matter of getting that information out there. And I think we need to do a better job from school district to school district, from regardless if you're parochial school, regardless if you're a Christian school, that information still needs to get out.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. And going to the teachers and having the teachers help promote it, I think is absolutely the way to go. And I know that I know lots of teachers, and I'm recalling a particular conversation I had with a teacher that lives in a different county. I'll not rip a particular county right now, but lives in a different county than we do. And teaches in a different county. And they said that they would not allow their own children to go to their school because their school has little or no community involvement, that that the entire atmosphere is so poor that they wouldn't allow their own kids to go there. They have their own kids go to a private school rather than go to where they're teaching. And I mean, that to me speaks volumes. Fortunately, the school district where my boys were going to school has a great reputation, and it is exactly what you said. The culture for that particular school that they were going to, incredible amount of involvement. They win an incredible amount of awards. The kids do, the teachers do, and the teachers in the area, they know about this, and they're trying to get to that school. So the teachers want it. We need to give them a vehicle so that they can make it happen in all of the districts, not just have the teachers out there trying to figure out how they get to the good ones.
Absolutely, and I think we need to empower our teachers to want to be more involved in fixing the problem. I talk to teacher upon teacher upon teacher, and they've got all these great ideas, and I'm like, why aren't we implementing these things? And they're like, well, you know, there's resistance, and we don't want to be the one. We're afraid we might lose our jobs. And, I mean, sadly, education kind of is political. I don't know how it became that way, and my heart breaks for a lot of these teachers because, you know, really, you have to ask yourself, you know, if you count on your hand how many really great teachers you've had, is it 10 really great teachers? Is it 20 really great teachers? I mean, I'm a college graduate. I've been going, you know, I went, you know, for a lot of years, and when I ask that question and you really think about it, in my case, it was a handful of really good teachers that to this day that I really felt impacted my education, and I had many more than a handful of teachers. So I think it has to start from within. I think our teachers have to be empowered and inspired and feel like they can change education, that they feel that they really are making a difference. And sadly, many of us, I mean, here I am, you know, an author, a publisher, I need to go back and thank those teachers that inspired me, because they may never know that what impact that their, you know, that 1 year that they had me made on my life. So I think they need to hear it back. You know, they need to hear that what they're doing is of value and what they're doing is changing lives. But I'm the firm believer that a teacher truly can change a child's life. A really inspiring teacher, you know, that's a teacher everybody talks about. We've got one at our school. Everybody talks about our second grade teacher. She's incredible. And sadly, there's not more of her. I wish there was. I wish we could. I don't believe in cloning, but in that case, I would love to have more of her because she's phenomenal.
I think maybe what you're saying is education should be more driven from the bottom up rather than top down. In other words, less dictation by administration as to what the curriculum should be, more input from the teachers as to what the curriculum should be and how it should be taught.
Right, and in fact, the grade school that my boys went to, we had a phenomenal principal, and we had phenomenal teachers. But one of the top teachers, when it came time for our principal to move on, one of our top teachers, that principal fought for that teacher to become the principal, not to become an assistant principal, not to, you know, to do, you know, whatever. I mean, they became the principal because that principal understood the culture. And so when they knew that they had to move on, which is a whole nother story for me, because our county initiated something to where the principals have to rotate now or something. Which just made no sense to me at all because they had such a great continuity there. I mean, I understand you want to get good ones in other places, but, you know, let's not break up certain things as well. But what I did like is that she fought to say, look, if I'm moving on, this is the person that I believe should take over. And she has, and she's done a great job because she's tried to keep the same culture there of positiveness.
I absolutely agree. I think it really does, you know, the way the educational system is structured, it isn't from the bottom up, and it isn't really elevating some of the teachers' ideas and thoughts and getting them to be used on a day-to-day basis. I really wish that we did take a hard look at that, because if you look at really successful schools, like we've already said, it comes from building that strong community from within, and it's really from within, and empowering kids. I mean, with all of these budget cuts, more and more schools are going to the philosophy of, look, our janitor can't be in a bazillion places at once. Let's take back our school. Let's clean up our school. And by empowering the kids, to be in charge of cleaning up their classrooms. They're in essence taking back their school.
Mm-hmm. Well, it brings me to the question in terms of motivating students that just aren't motivated to begin with. I think that what you're talking about goes a long way towards doing that. If we look at the things that motivate human beings, I guess we could try fear, you know, scream and yell at the kids. I guess we could try greed by offering them more money for better grades. Or we could try guilt by making them feel bad that they're letting the whole family down by getting bad grades. But I think the only thing that really is going to work long term is self-motivation, a pride, if you will, that, you know, this is our campus. We need to keep it clean. These are my grades. I need to do the best I can. That self-motivation is going to carry them a lot further in life than any of those external motivators. And is that what you're saying?
I absolutely agree with that. I actually take it a step further and say that I think that's a really good way to reach those kids that aren't inspired in school. I mean, I get that question all the time. You know, I've got a son, I got a daughter, they just aren't interested in school, I don't know what to do, I'm kind of at my wit's end. And then the first thing I say back to them is, well, what is your child into? Are they into sports? Are they, do they like to bowl? What, you know, what is it that they like to do? Are they into gardening? Are they into art? What, you know, everybody has a hot button. And, you know, maybe it's as simple as they love to play, you know, computer games. Well, you know what? You can start blogging about computer games, and there's a lot of kids out there. Look at the Facebook founders that have made a lot of money coming up with a solution to something in the computer world. So it's about really inspiring them to realize that they can make a difference. If they love to read, well, maybe they could do, you know, book reviews. If they love to garden, you know, maybe they can make a little side business on helping other people figure out what to plant, or maybe a weeding business. I mean, there's so many things that you can do to inspire them, to take them out of that daily grind and kind of show them that the world's, you know, their canvas, and it needs to start now, whether they're in sixth grade or seventh, you know, to really start following their passion and figure it out what it is that they want to do someday.
Well, and, you know, Stacey, I noticed you also talk about homework for parents. What exactly do you mean by that? In other words, what are the things that they can be doing as part of their homework?
They need to stop, drop, and listen every day. Stop what they're doing, drop to their child's level, and listen. And I think that we don't, you know, that's not something that we're telling parents that they need to do, but it really is something that they have to do. If they want to be involved in education, the most simple thing that they can do is stop, drop, and listen to their child every day. I mean, the amount of information my kids tell me, I'm still the bus. I run mm-hmm. 4 businesses from home. I work around my kids' schedule, so I'm still driving them to school every morning. I'm still picking them up at night. And it's that time, the minute they get in the car, the minute I pick them up from school, they each have to tell me about their day. And I don't filter anything. They just tell me whatever it is that they have to tell me. And I learn so much information. I ask more questions. I really feel that I'm involved in their day then, because they're telling me what they want to know, you know, what they want to tell me. And I can kind of, there's so much information that they're giving me. You know, I'll know if there's a conflict on the, you know, on the playground. I'll know if there was an incident in the lunchroom. I'll know if somebody had an accident and dropped a tray. You know, I know all kinds of things that I wouldn't have known had I not just buttoned my lip and listened.
Well, and exactly. And to add to that, I think from the standpoint of asking the right questions, and it's one of the things that we do and one of the things that I promote to some of the other parents, which is ask a question when you pick them up every day. And the question oftentimes is, what was the most interesting part of your day today? We don't want the same question all the time. You know, what did you do today? What did you do today? What did you do? You know what? That gets old. But if you ask what's the most interesting, what's the most intriguing, what was the most fun, if you start to something like that, they get to talk about something that really interests them or they find entertaining. So if you do that, they understand you are willing to listen. So I couldn't agree with you more.
And you're right, the open-ended question is always the best way to go. If you ask an open-ended question, they will, you know, have to respond in something other than yes or no. How was your, you know, did you have a good day? Yeah. That's it.
Right,
well,
right.
You have to restructure your question in a matter of, tell me what was the most interesting part of your day, to get them to talk. And I will tell you, the number one complaint I get from kindergarten teachers, and this is so sad it just breaks my heart, is the number of kids that come to kindergarten that cannot answer an open-ended question. They can only answer in a yes or no question.
Or a grunt.
And that tells me that these poor little kids aren't being talked to. You need to talk to your kids. You need to have conversations with your kids, and you need to really value what they're saying. You need to really stop and listen to what those kids are saying, because they're giving you clues. You just have to really listen to what they're saying.
Well, and to add to that as well, and me going back to being the room parent, I know that during one of the sessions, and what I used to do is I would take my group, and we live in Southern California, we have great weather, I took them outside. Oftentimes, I'd say, everybody pick up your chairs, grab your book, we're going to go sit outside. And we sat outside, and one of the boys in there that had not spoken much, he wouldn't speak up much, that was in my particular group, and he said, you know, I wish my dad was retired like you. And I said, why do you think I'm retired? And he said, well, because you can be here, and because you know, we hear you tell stories with your son, and we see that you're here picking him up, and we see that you're here dropping him off. And I said, well, I'm not retired. I said, I'm just, my job is such that I'm able to kind of work around it. And he said, well, then I wish my dad's was like that. Because he goes, I don't see him in the morning because he leaves for work before I go to school, and I rarely see him at night because he gets home so late. So really, the only time that I see him is on the weekend. And you know, that to me, and I made it a point to share that conversation with the dad. You know, when I met him at another school function, and I shared it with him, and I said, I just want to share this with you. This is what your son's thinking about, you know, when he's at school. And I felt really good because the dad did get more involved. He started coming to more functions and said, you know, well, you know, what can I do? You know, my work schedule is such. And I said, well, maybe you can help in other areas, like on some of the field trips or on some of the things that aren't a day-to-day situation. But so understand, when you're talking to your kids and you're asking them these questions, to them, that's making their day.
Just absolutely.
Being available.
Absolutely. I think another thing that we can do, and this is something that I always encourage parents to do, and granted, the number of parents that I talk to are parents that are in the poverty situation, but this doesn't, I don't think poverty is anything, I think this comes across from every angle. It doesn't matter what your social economic situation is. We all need to remember to stop, drop, and listen. We all need to remember to unload the backpack or when they're little and kind of ask about homework, you know. Just, you know, make it part, you know, is there anything I can do to help you with your homework today? Is there anything you're stuck on? Or, you know, can I sit down and see what you're working on in homework? You know, you have to ask the question. You do it in a non-threatening way. Just want to be involved. And if you've always done it, I mean, my kids drag first thing they do is they drag out the homework file. And, you know, I don't have to say it anymore. It's just part of our, they can't imagine a mom not helping their kids with homework because it's always something that we've done. Or dad, because dad does a lot of the math. I'm not going to lie there. They know that. And my kids love it that mommy's an author and she's a really bad speller. You know, they think that's hysterical because it breaks the stereotypes that, you know, you
that's
have
right.
to be a good speller in order to be an author. Well, you know what? You don't. And my daughter will tell people, mommy, we just released a Spanish book, yet mom doesn't know any Spanish. You just hire a translator. See, anybody can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. Anybody can do anything as long as you put your mind to it. But I like to say, not only do you need to go look at the homework and talk about homework and be involved in homework and make it fun, or think of things that you can do to kind of take it away from being like this homework thing. So, for example, my daughter had to pick a county, since we're talking about counties, and that's one of the things she wanted to do. Well, she picked the county that we always vacation at, that's my hometown. And so she knew it would be something that we'd have pictures of, so she has to make a little brochure. Well, you know, they have to show all the touristy things that we do in this county. Well, they're all pictures of her fishing and her you know, jet skiing and her, you know, all the fun things that she likes to do, her ATV ride. So it's kind of a way to kind of showcase this county, but it just happens to be all her pictures. And so she's kind of involved the whole family. And, oh, yeah, we'll put this one of the horseback riding in it with my sister, and this one with, well, my sister's doing the go-karting because that's really big in that area. And so it's a real tourist town. And so it was kind of a way to all be involved in her homework project. So that's the other thing. I mean, you can make homework fun. It doesn't have to, you know, be this horrible thing. And there's going to be days you don't know the answers, and don't panic. You don't know the answers, Google it. If you can't find it, write a note for the teacher and say, gosh, really wasn't getting this, because you're probably not the only parent that wrote that note that day.
Yeah.
And I also like to say, you have to start young. You got to read with your kids. You got to make reading fun. Reading is the key. Reading really is the key. And they have to see you like to read. I mean, I kept telling this to my husband, who wasn't a reader. And, you know, I said, you know, the kids always see me reading. They know I'm an author. You know, they know we have a publishing mm-hmm. company. But it would go a long way if they see you read. And so he actually discovered the love for reading at 42. I'm so
nice.
Proud of him. So Saturday nights are reading days, and they pull up their books, and we have our books, and his are all hunting, I might add, bow hunting trips. And but you know what? That's his passion, and that's the other thing. You got to find that hot button for each of us, and kind of allow them to follow their passion.
It doesn't
and
matter
let them
what
explore different things.
It doesn't matter so much what they're reading. It's that they're reading.
That's
and I
right.
think that your point about starting as early as possible, I mean, my youngest is 23 and doesn't live at home, and she will still call us when she gets stuck on a homework problem or a project. And at this point, I'm clueless. I don't know what she's talking about anymore.
I love that. You're right. You know, as long as they just want to use you as a sounding board. And isn't that a great feeling that at 23 she's still calling you with a homework
yeah,
problem?
Terrific.
I can't wait for that day. I just can't wait for that day. And when they're younger, you know, we always did something repetitive with them, you know, play a repetitive game. You know, even in the you know, when I was cooking and they wanted to do something, you know, okay, let's watch mommy, you know, count how many times mommy's stirring the soup so we can eat it. One, two. You know, when they're little, and then as they're getting older, we still do something. I mean, we went, we weren't traveling this weekend, but we did go about 45 minutes away and went to a water park with the kids. And so we're always trying to do something, you know, whether it's hiking or out on the ATVs, you know, we're always doing something fun as a family. But I want to stop right there and say it doesn't have to cost money. Just going
right.
to the library,
right.
you know, walking around the block, walking around the house, you know, going for, you know, if you've got bikes, you know, doing something, you know, outside, or just going to look at a nature walk, looking at
right.
all the pretty, you know, everything's in bloom. It's summer, you know, looking at all the different beautiful leaves on the trees. I mean, you can be anything, and it doesn't have to involve costing money.
Right.
That's a big fallacy. My kids have so much fun. Still, and they're older. They still like to make up things in clouds. They still like to count stars at night. You know, they love having a campfire in the backyard. You know, and telling stories about when they were little, or telling stories about people that aren't with us anymore, like grandma and grandpa's stories. Oh, tell us another grandpa story. Tell us another grandma story. And you know, I think my grandparents would just get such a crack up knowing that my kids know all these little stories about them that they had shared with me when I was little, and that I get to do it for my kids. So it's really about spending quality time with your family, having fun.
Well, and absolutely, and actually, I got to call Tom on something here. Now, Tom is talking about he's getting these calls, and she's now 23. Is that right?
Okay, she turned 24 yesterday.
Okay, just turned 24. Now, what I need to call him on is that. Yes, that's happening now. But during that time between about 15 and 17, I don't know
not
if you're
so
getting
much.
Not so much. But the thing is, and the reason I wanted to bring that up is, and I know Tom's kids is that, and they are great kids. But by doing all those things earlier, there's going to be challenges between that time of about 14 to 17. But it all comes back. In other words, all those things that they were taught when they were younger, it comes back. So now when they go to college and they realize that, you know, we really did, you know, not lose our mind as parents, and we really did know a few things, you know, all of that comes back, and they are now comfortable, like Tom says, to call him at 23, now 24 years old, to ask for some help.
As Alan well knows, we looked forward to the day that we would be empty nesters, and it hasn't happened yet. Our old oldest two are 29. I have a 27-year-old and a 24-year-old, and they're at our house all the time because it is home to them.
That's right.
And always will be. So empty nest, forget it. It's not going to happen.
Okay. And Stacy, before we, believe it or not, we've only got about 10 minutes. I can't believe time has flown by, but that seems to be the way. Let everybody know, I mean, how to get a hold of you. I mean, from the standpoint, if they're interested in your book, if they're interested in you as a speaker or for blogging or whatever, how do they get a hold of you?
They can find me at cedarvalleypublishing.com, or they can just Google my name. It's Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, Cannenberg, K-A-N-N-E-N-B-E-R-G. If you're out there and you're really not sure what to do, if you're having some problems with your kids, if you've got a child with learning disability, I've got tons of resources, so please feel free to give me a shoot me an email. I'm Stacey, S-T-A-C-E-Y, at cedarvalleypublishing.com, or just check out the website and give me a call.
All right, but if for those of you that are driving, and you didn't get a chance to write that down, you can always go to our site, Answers for the Family. That's Answers, the numeral for the family. Send us a message on how to get a hold of Stacey. We'll send you an email, or we'll call you back if you tend to call in by phone. We will get you the information so that you can get a hold of her. Tom?
I have a quick question for you, Stacy. I was looking through some of the literature, and you're talking about what do you do when your kids are kind of on the outs, or maybe they're being picked on, they don't belong to the clique. How have you dealt with that in the past? I have three daughters, so I've had to deal with it, but I'm interested in your input on that.
You know what? The clique is something that sadly starts in kindergarten, and it just doesn't ever seem to go away. And I think the easiest thing, first off, is you gotta kind of know your child. You gotta kind of know that they're normal personality. You know, we've got one child that's a little quieter than the other child, so they kind of like, they're more of the leader than the follower. They kind of like to do whatever. They were the child that everybody else had their Halloween costume on, and she didn't really want it on. And rather than be upset, I realize she's showing leadership qualities here that I can't stifle, because it's like, you know, she doesn't really care what everybody else is doing. This isn't, you know, and so rather than trying to make her fit in, it was really tough as a parent to kind of like, okay, she's a leader. Let her do what she wants to do. If she's happy, that's fine. I'm not going to rock the boat. See, first off, really know your child to find out, you know, if this is something new that they're coming home and they seem a little bit more depressed. So if you're actively involved in what's going on, you can probably spot those a little quicker than somebody that might not be, you know, in tune with what their child's doing. But I would definitely say have a talk with your child and say, you know, something seems different. Can you talk about, is it something at school? And if they're not really wanting to talk, it's really great to either email your teacher or have a good relationship with that, you know, some of the child's teachers to kind of say, hey, I've noticed, you know, my son's coming home and he's just not the same person. Is there something else going on? That's when you might want to, you know, just pop in at school and just kind of show up at lunch to kind of see if you can observe things, so that you kind of, or talk to people that are in the lunchroom. That it's nice to have that community already built so that you can kind of find out what's going on. And really, if you really sit down and talk to your child and say, look, you know, is there a click? Is it, are they picking on you? What's going on? We got to get to the bottom of it. And that's when you really need to call upon your community, build up that community so that you can go in and talk to some of the other parents. And maybe what you're going to find out is that there's a number of them that feel picked on by this mm-hmm. same child, or that there's a number of them that are feeling kind of the same way. And then what we need to do is band that number together so that they kind of hang out. And without, you know, as they get older, middle school, high school, you know, you don't want your mom coming in, you know, breaking up the clique. You know, that would just, you know, they'd probably die of mortification. But you have to really get in there and give them the skills to be able to say, look, is it just this group? Let's think about it. Who else is nice to you? Is there somebody that you want to hang out? Should we maybe do something? Let's invite, you know, a few of the kids over. Who do you want to invite over? You know, and try to help them bring in that community, that support system, because I think that as teenagers, we always kind of think about ourselves and we don't really take ourselves out of this situation to think, well, maybe that person over there or that person over there is feeling the same thing. And I think if, as a parent, if you're doing a really good job giving your child skills and tools, you can say, look, you know, there might be other kids that are feeling the same way. Who can we do? How can we build your network so that you're not feeling all alone? What can we do? You know, do you want, you know, I did this with my kids when they were in second grade and there was quite the click going on. I invited them all over. There were 14 little girls at my house. We'd made pillowcases, and the whole goal was I sat them all down and I talked to their parents. It was going to be a bonding day. It wasn't a party day. It was just a bonding day because there's so many, you know, these four were mad at these four. And so we made pillowcases and we had everybody sign them, and I wanted them to sign, put something on that they really meant, and if they couldn't say anything nice about that person, then, you know what, just sign their name, or if they couldn't even sign their name, then we knew that there was a problem. But everybody signed everybody's pillowcases, and they wrote really nice things. So my daughter would come home, you know, on a day where maybe one of them wasn't so nice, and she'd take out that pillowcase and see what that little girl wrote about her. And she said, that's what that girl really feels about me, and I can't get hung up on a day-to-day basis of all this drama. It's just not healthy. So I'm not going to hang out with her right now until she grows up a little bit more and sees that, you know, we can't have all this drama on a daily basis. So she kind of grew a little ways away from this little girl, and now they're friends again 2 years later since they kind of worked through it. But it's about talking. It's about having that conversation. And as a parent, you got to stop yourself and think, oh, they'll just resolve it. It's just kids. Well, you know what? Bullying can lead to suicide. Bullying can lead to drugs. Bullying can lead to all kinds of things. So you need to get in and realize that, you know what, this is an opportunity, and this is a consequence. If you don't take action, you know, things can either go one way or the other. You got to give your child those skills to be able to keep them on the right path, keep them from, you know, either overreacting or finding a new way to look at it as a positive. Because maybe they realize that, you know what, I don't want to be like that click anyway. Let's find some other people that I want to hang with anyway.
And sometimes when you're dealing with particularly middle school age girls, tend to be very cliquish. And what's worked well for me is to point out to my kids retrospectively that, wait a minute, a month ago you weren't on the out. So what has changed? Is it you that's changed, or is it this group has just singled you out because you happen to be the out of the month? And next month, let's review it and see if it's the same situation still exists, because it does tend to fluctuate over time. You know, they do tend to single out one person. And as you pointed out, if it does continue for any length of time, it could lead to disastrous results, to risk-taking behavior. It can drive kids to doing the kind of things that Alan and I get involved in with interventions, and we don't want to get to that point. But I think times, as you're saying, just having the conversation with the child, pointing out that this may not be a life sentence. You know, this may be just, you're happen to be the one who's out this month, but what was the situation a month ago?
Right.
Where do you think it's headed in the future?
Right. And and Stacey, I love what you're doing in regards to your daughter's socialization. Mm-hmm. I think that's huge, because not only are we dealing with kids that have gotten involved in drugs or have tried to harm themselves, they've cut on themselves, but there's this whole movement now to not socializing in person because of all the social networks. So you have parents allowing their kids to get on a social network at a very young age, which is a whole nother topic for another show. But the fact that you're helping to foster this type of socialization, I think is incredible. And I think all the parents need to really listen to that point, because I think it's very powerful.
Well, I think the key to any successful business is networking. The key to any successful product is building a network of people supporting it. So when I was a mom, I was kind of at a loss when I first had my kids. And I thought, okay, I feel like I'm struggling. I feel isolated. And I thought, I need to build a network.
That's right.
You know, network is the key. It really is. If you know, and one of the missions that I have, that I want to really talk to those young little girls, because I find that it's the little girl clique that seems to be the most harmful for so many of these schools that I'm talking to, their school districts, that we really need to kind of get into the heads of these little girls when they're little, because they can be, some of the things that they say are quite cruel and mean. And I want parents to realize that these kindergarten cliques can be very, very harming to other kids. They don't intentionally mean to, but, you know, by letting them go on and get bigger and bigger and bigger, you know, we're not doing anything of service to the rest of the community, the rest of the kids, if we just put blinders on and pretend that, oh, they're just kindergartners, they're not, you know, no big deal. Well, you know what? We do need to get involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stacy, we are just about out of time. Thank you so much. And first of all, I'd love to have you back on. This has been great. And again, let's tell everybody once more, in case they were driving earlier, how can they reach you?
They can reach me at cedarvalleypublishing.com.
Okay, and that's Cedar, C-E-D-A-R-V-A-L-L-E-Y, publishing.com. Again, thank you, and we will look forward to talking to you again. I've checked out your blog. I'm now going to be one that's going to get on there as well.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye now. Tom. That was great. I appreciate you having you.
Thank you for inviting me, guys.
I appreciate your input. It is great. And in the same sense, I hope to be able to have you back here as well as co-host.
Now, anytime.
And now, if anybody needs to reach you, we didn't get a chance to talk a lot about what you do. If they need to reach you, give us a website or a phone number.
Again, we work with youth at risk. The best way to get a hold of us is by phone, 714-839-3388 or 714-839-3330.
And as always, you can reach us at Answers for the Family. That's Answers, the numeral for thefamily.com. And with that, I just want to leave everybody with, remember, unless the investment in children is made, all of humanity's most fundamental long-term problems will remain fundamental long-term problems. Thank you. Someone's calling in.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. Only on LA Talk Radio.